This is episode number 376 with Gabby Leibovich of the Founder Podcast.
What you need is thirst. You need to be a thirsty human
who is intent on learning.
It's a really fascinating exploration of human potential.
Now. The Founder Podcast. Even the greatest entrepreneurs had help. If you want to learn from the most successful founders on the planet, you are in the right place. Branson, Mark Cuban, Tony Robbins, Tim Ferriss, Arianna Huffington, Seth Godin, Steve Case, Gary Vee, Sophia Amoroso, Barbara Corcoran, Damon John. Learn from the greatest minds in business today with interviews hosted by Nathan Chan. This is not your average entrepreneur podcast. The Founder Podcast.
Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Before we start today's episode, I just want to let you know that our goal at Founder is to help entrepreneurs succeed however we can by giving away high quality content in the form of interviews, blog posts, podcasts, YouTube videos, you name it. We put out so much content to help you. And another interesting project that we're working on right now is partnering with world-class founders like Damon John, Alexa Von Tobel, Greta Van Riel, and so many more to teach crucial skills like negotiation, finance, e-commerce, and so much more. So if you'd like to get access to these free trainings with founders like this, which is 100% free, just go to founder.com/free. Okay, so now let's talk about today's episode. Hey guys, Nathan here from hometown Melbourne, Australia. Hope you're having a great day wherever you are around the world. Today's guest, Gabby, is co-founder of Australia's number one e-commerce group called The Catch Group. And after building Catch of the Day from, you know, a garage in 2006, like this company was acquired for $230 million. He's founded many other companies like Eat Now, Scoopon, and he's also an investor in 20 other tech businesses. So he's done over $1 billion in exits, and this is an incredible interview. We talk about his entrepreneurial journey, really how he identifies entrepreneurs within his team and really finds other people to partner with, the formula for creating luck, the 1+1=3 concept, and really so much more. This is an incredible interview. You're going to absolutely love this one. So guys, that's it from me. Now let's jump in the show. Gabby, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me. It's not often that we get to do interviews in person. A lot of them are overseas or online with everything that's happening. But yeah, thanks very much for taking the time.
And it's been a crazy year when people have been avoiding each other.
Yeah.
And yeah, I much prefer this to something over Zoom, which is not as personal.
Yeah, yeah. So it's great to get you in the studio. It's great that you live in Melbourne. And yeah, you've built like multiple extremely successful companies. I was telling Charlie offline, when I worked my first job at an accounting firm in IT support, someone told me about Catch of the Day, and I was like a customer. I used to buy stuff from you guys, like probably would have been in 2009 or in the early days, you guys, when you first launched. So, yeah, the first question I ask everyone that comes on is, how did you get your job?
Catch of the Day? How did it start?
Yeah, well, like how did you find yourself doing the work you're doing today?
Okay, because it's funny, I never called it a job ever before, would you believe? And it's probably something that I've never shared before with anyone. I've never been to an interview and I've never had a resume. So, you know, at the age of 18, I was already selling at Melbourne markets on Sunday, and I probably earned, you know, more in 5 hours than most people earned in a whole week. I was very entrepreneurial. We talk about it in the book. And my brother was my assistant, Hezi, who is my partner today on everything. He was 12 years old at the time. Mm-hmm. By the way, I've just turned 50 recently for the viewers to understand the timescale. I arrived in Australia from Israel in 1986, just to put everything into perspective. Yes. I've spent 10 years working in my father's business, which is something similar to a JB Hi-Fi or a Good Guys. It was a store in Brighton called Panacells, Brighton, Melbourne, selling televisions, microwave, cordless phones, mobile phones, cameras, and the like. And I did that until I was about 32 years old. So throughout my career, I actually worked for my dad, who is a small business entrepreneur of sorts.
Yes.
And I'm guessing a lot of that retail, what I like to call DNA, rubbed onto me, whether it's buying, selling, marketing, creating ads. We were advertising on radio, television, newspapers, and that was my job. And around the age of 32, it was 2002, I left the job and I looked for something else. And I was literally unemployed, sitting at home for 6 months, not doing anything, searching online, very early days of online, looking for something to do. And someone introduced eBay to me. It was very early days of eBay. Not many people knew what eBay actually meant and its potential. In the early days of eBay, most customers said, "Is it safe to put your credit card online?" And I'm sure that you remember that period. We all smile when we talk about that. But it wasn't that long ago. Mm. Funnily enough, we're just getting out of COVID 2020, this crazy corona year where retail stores were actually shut. And all we did was online shopping for products and food. And after selling on eBay for 2 years, literally from the garage of my suburb in Caulfield, Victoria, going every day to the local post office and shipping 10, 20, 50 items. Together with my brother, we launched Catch of the Day from a tiny little warehouse in the suburb of Moorabbin.
How did you come up with the concept, like one deal a day? Like what was that?
Yeah, so we actually did not come up with it. We spotted an American site that was doing exactly the same thing. We talk in the book that, sometimes in life and in business, it's better to imitate a successful concept than be original and be very mediocre. And there's nothing wrong with imitating, copying, grabbing bits and pieces from other successful, digital businesses that you like and creating your own vision, direction, and execution. So we spotted a site in the USA called Woot, WOOT.com.
Yes.
Woot is still in existence today in the USA, and today it's actually owned by Amazon.
Oh.
And Woot was that crazy company, the first one ever, to come up with that crazy concept of selling one deal a day.
Mm.
So every day, Woot did it at midnight, and we looked at their concept and said, "Wow, that's really interesting. And we think that we are good buyers. We have some great merchandise. Let's come up. Let's launch the Woot of Australia." And in the book, we discussed that, moment we came up with the name, we realized that it may have the number 24 in it, which led to Catch 24, Catch 22, Catch of the Day. One of us told the other one, "What are you, crazy? Are we selling fish? This will never work." About the never work bit, I remember going to the first few suppliers around Melbourne. I was the buyer. I was driving in the van around the streets of Melbourne, knocking on doors of suppliers and trying to get goods off them.
Yes.
And I remember speaking to the first bunch of people and telling them that this is what we want to do. And I'm almost certain that as soon as we left the room, they must have looked at each other and said, "This guy's crazy. What are they doing? They're selling online. They're selling one deal a day. This concept would never work out." But look, 4 years later, cut the long story short, we were already Australia's most watched online shopping site.
Yeah, crazy. Mm. So, that's insanely short growth. Like, what do you think was driving that?
We discuss it in the book, and this is something that we have thought about a lot. And people ask me a lot of time, why was Catch of the Day successful in those early days? What many that have tried to sell online were not successful. And it comes up to a million different things.
Yeah.
But if I have to pick one, I always talk about the buyers and the buying capability. So we think that the buyers, being a retail business, is the reason that they really differentiate us from anything else. We're able to buy goods at very, very low prices. As such, we were able to sell them at prices that were lower than the market price. And that created a lot of street buzz and word of mouth. Mm. I'm always very proud to say that in the first 5 years in business, we never spent any money on marketing. Our marketing was putting great deals on the page and let the FOMO effect take control. FOMO, fear of missing out. Our products often sold out within a 24-hour period, 4-hour period, 1-hour period, sometimes even within 20 minutes.
Yep.
We were selling some crazy amounts of goods. I remember days where we sold 4,000 laptops in one day.
Yeah, wow.
$1 million of televisions in an hour. Some really, really crazy numbers. And that created a lot of buzz and street talk within the consumers, but also within the supply industry. Everyone started hearing about that crazy little website in Melbourne that can move millions of dollars of goods in a single day. This was perfect for suppliers because we looked at ourselves as solution providers to those suppliers. We could go to local suppliers that had stock stuck in the warehouse, and every supplier, every brand owner makes some mistakes. None of them are perfect. And they all have something in that corner of the warehouse that they really need to get rid of and convert it back to cash so they can buy the next container of goods. And we were able to negotiate hard and get great products at great prices. And as such, create a lot of buzz by bringing a whole new bunch of customers. And on top of that, that created a big snowball that brought more media attention, PR, and the list goes on.
Yeah, so just insane offers with this kind of just hype around missing out, the scarcity.
Yep.
And then you've got this kind of everyday launch model. So you keep building that customer base and
That's right.
customer base to expect an epic deal. So then there's more and more attention, more and more attention.
Yeah.
And it's very shareable as well.
That's right. And what we decided from day one to keep it even more exciting, we decided to appeal to the whole database, the whole Australian community. Basically, we had deals for guys and girls, young and old, male, female, country, CBD, and so on. Meaning, on day one, we had a DVD player, day two would be perfume, day three, a pillow, day five, a baby toy, and day six, a perfume. You may come in on a Tuesday and not find something that you like, but it would still be something great at a great price. Mm-hmm. And you may buy it for someone else, or you may not buy anything. But the strength of the deal created that amazing need to come and check us every day at midday. And every day, the audience just kept on growing from thousands to tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of people that visit us on any given day to see what is the catch of the day. Mm-hmm. I really miss those days, Adam. It was a lot of fun bringing those crazy goods to the consumers and seeing how much they love it.
Yeah, no, look... Really, really interesting. I love your idea around kind of looking for inspiration at other regions or markets and then putting a slight little tweak or putting a little different spin on it, because oftentimes people, yep, now more than ever, yep, during this time period, people want to start a business but they don't know where to start, and they love the idea of having a business, that freedom, that idea of being in your own control. But oftentimes they say, well, I don't have a good enough idea yet. And I'm sure you hear that all the time.
So it's interesting. So in this book, we have about 200 lessons. The book is Catch of the Decade Everywhere, number one on Booktopia right now. In this book, there's 200 small lessons and there's about 25 larger lessons. And one of the larger lessons actually is about ideas. And as investors in startups, a lot of people reach out to us on a regular basis. They say, oh, I've got a great idea, but I'm not sure if I want to share it with you. But how are you going to get your ideas off the ground unless you open up and share it with someone? Ideas are so easy to find. I mean, I promise you that any idea that you can come up with, someone else is working on it right now around the world. What makes the difference between an idea reaching success or not is those 1,000 small decisions that need to be done in the office every single day by yourself and by your team, of course, that will differentiate you from the winner to the non-winner. For example, Adam, in April 2010, we spotted another great idea online, and that was a company in the USA called Groupon. We all know Groupon right now. And by the way, around the same time that we spotted Groupon, another 80 startups around Australia also spotted Groupon, and hundreds around the world. For those that don't know what Groupon is, Groupon is very similar to the concept of Catch, but instead of selling products, they offer discounted services, things along the lines of massage, entry to a theme park, a concert, or a discounted sitting in a restaurant. And we launched Groupon. The start of chapter two starts with the launch of Groupon. And the title of this chapter is Great Idea by Midnight, Execute by Midday. We basically saw Groupon. We said, shit, this is good. Let's start building it. And we started building it literally the next day. Today, those 80 competitors have completely disappeared. They've disappeared years ago, by the way. And today, there's only two players in the market that are still competing. It's Scoupon that ended in a merge up with the Lux Group, Luxury Escapes, and Groupon themselves. The other 78 are no longer here, and I can't even name them because I've forgotten about them a long time ago. The reason we succeeded is in the execution. It's not the idea. These are a dime a dozen.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm curious, when it comes to, I guess, with Catch of the Day, you know, in the book you talk about over, you know, many different businesses, that digital businesses that you've either developed or started. Yeah. I'm curious, what about focus?
It's a very good question, and we definitely talk about that in the book as well. So after we're launching Scoupon, which was in April 2010, we realized that we're onto something very special. We were able to take our existing database that we have developed for the last 5 years. That database is very large, call it 1 million customers. They absolutely love and trust us because they come and visit us every day. And we were able to divert that database from Catch to Scoupon. And Scoupon turned into an amazing success story. So we sat in the office and said, wow, what else can we do? What other verticals can we replicate and build with the toolbox that we have developed in our building? The toolbox meaning the customer service team, the IT team, yep, the marketing team, the database, the financial backing, and so on. And the next business that we've built, and this we've built all that in 1 year, we launched Grocery Run, a site selling groceries online. Would you believe, Adam, that Grocery Run sold groceries online before Coles and Woolworths? Yeah. So they haven't realized the opportunity as early as 2011. And that was quite successful. 6 months later, we launched another site called Mumgo, M-U-M-G-O, site for mums and baby products. Call it Baby Bunting Online. And Mumgo was also very successful. Would you believe, on the first day of Mumgo, we've already had 371,000 members that have migrated from our other website, wow, ready for the launch of the site. I mean, these are phenomenal numbers today, and certainly phenomenal in 2012, which was more than 8 years ago. And that wasn't enough for us, Adam. So we continued, and we bought the majority stake in a wine business based in Adelaide called Vinomofo. And we migrated them from Adelaide to our office in Mulgrave, Melbourne. And guess what? That wasn't enough either. And we spotted another hot trend around the world, the trend of food delivery from restaurant. And we launched a site called Eat Now. Same concept that I've just mentioned and repeated. We did the same thing with Eat Now that was competing at this time with only one Australian player called Menulog. I'm going to stop here because I can go in various different directions, but I want you to lead the conversation.
Yeah, no, this is great because, like, I've kind of seen a little bit of this story as well. Yeah. Because
by the way, your question was on focus. I didn't even answer that.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Yeah, because I actually know Jeremy Sain.
Of course.
Yeah. So
he's part of the story, of course.
Yeah, that's right. So you keep spinning up businesses. I think it's really, really smart that you're looking to capitalize on existing database and then just bolt on other ways that you can help service, yep, and provide value to that customer base.
Yep.
When you spin up these other businesses, do you go through an idea validation process? Like, what does that look like?
Nope. I like to call this whole topic gut feeling. But what is gut feeling? You know, I'm 50 years old and I've got 50 years of experience of reading Founder and reading TechCrunch and reading the Financial Review and seeing what's happening around the world. And when you make yourself aware of your surroundings, that's where you spot opportunities. You know, we talk in the book about the concept of luck. And we think that luck is composed of three things. The first one is learning, what I just mentioned. The second one is timing. And of course, timing is always important. And, you know, And we can definitely see that right now as we approach 2021. And I think it's going to be the best time ever to launch a startup or invest in a startup. And the other part in timing is location. What's location? Making yourself available. I made myself available to meet you today and discuss that. And I know that good things will happen to me and to you by our interaction. And I've been making myself available throughout my career. I go to conferences and I'll go to events and you shake hands and you kiss babies and good things happen to you when you do all that. And that's the gut feeling and the luck and all mixed up. But at the same time, we're entrepreneurs need to back themselves, and entrepreneurs need to have high tolerance for risk. And I think that both myself and my brother have that high tolerance for risk. We're not afraid to take risks. We're not afraid to fail. And by the way, this book, Catch of the Decade, number one on Booktopia, is full of success stories, but it's also full of failures. And we failed many, many times, Adam. We failed many times, but we don't cry about spilled milk. You don't worry about it, and you just keep on moving. And that failure can cost millions of dollars sometimes.
I'm curious. Can you tell us about some of these failures? Like perhaps even like Menulog, like what happened there? Like it was
Menulog was a massive success.
Really?
Do you know what Menulog sold for?
Yes, I know. I know when it got spun up. But I remember in the early days though, it was a struggle to get going, right?
Menulog. It was definitely a struggle. Yes. I mean, look, Menulog was a separate business run from Sydney.
Yes.
We ran Eat Now.
Yes.
During the first 2 years of Eat Now, we were working extremely hard at trying to build a business while we competed against Menulog at the same time.
Yes.
We discuss in the book that after 2 years of running it, the business was losing something like $300,000 a month.
Yes.
In running cost. But we still believed in it. We still backed it. And let's be honest, it did pay off. So in that book, we're talking about focus and talking about running various businesses at the same time. We mentioned the line that in business, you need to kiss a few frogs in order to find your princess. And yes, we have kissed a few frogs and some of them succeeded, some did not. But our princess was certainly Menulog.
Yes.
Just to clarify to your audience, Menulog and Eat Now merged in February 2015. And suddenly Australia had one strong player that controlled the food delivery. To remind you again, this happened before Uber Eats and Deliveroo entered Australia. So again, we had no competition. The combined entity of Menulog and Eat Now, which by the way, we owned 30% of, and Menulog in Sydney owned 70% of, ended up selling to an equivalent large company from England called Just Eat for the crazy sum of $855 million. So I certainly cannot categorize the Eat Now Menulog transaction in the failure basket. This was one of our major successes and definitely an exit to remember.
Yeah, no, I guess I probably should have clarified. In the early days, I know it was a bit of a struggle.
Yeah. It's always good.
And I'm curious, like, if we know that, like, in the early days, like, Menulog was a bit of a struggle because Uber Eats hadn't come and that concept of, you know, ordering food online was so foreign. How did you know to persist?
I can't answer that. I mean, I'm guessing that within the office, we had millions of arguments of should we or shouldn't we? And it happens in lots of offices all around the world as you run your business. And none of us know whether this will get somewhere or will it get nowhere. And yes, well, there were times that we said losing $300,000 a month is not something that we wish to continue with. But at the end of the day, you know, we rolled the dice and we decided to, yes, continue with it. And we managed to get to the other side of the rainbow. And I'm happy to say that, that we did.
Hey guys, I hope you're enjoying this episode and learning a ton. As you know, in this series, we interview some of the greatest founders of our generation to find out how they did it. However, if you're thinking of starting your own business and you want to hear from some incredible stories from everyday people like you or I who are actually in the trenches, only been building their business for maybe 1 year or 2 years, like that are building right now and they're really in the early stages, but they're getting success, you should come and check out our new podcast, From Zero to Founder, hosted by our community manager, Molly Flynn. These are in the trenches stories from our very own successful students that have gone through some of our programs. People just like you who are deep within the process of building their very own successful business. These are the founders of tomorrow. You can find the From Zero to Founder podcast on all platforms. And remember, it's founder without the E. All right, now let's jump in the show.
And I'm curious around Catch. You guys ended up rebranding.
Yeah.
Why?
I think it was an easy choice, but the main reason that we rebranded, so Catch of the Day started in 2006, selling one deal a day. That one deal a day concept probably continued until about 2012-ish for about 5 or 6 years. And then Catch became something completely different. It became some sort of a flash type department store where we sold tens of thousands of products every single day, but they were sold in the form of events. What's an event? A sale on Adidas shoes, a sale on cameras, sale of groceries, sale of baby supplies, and so on. The model of flash deals stuck, whereby our deals were limited in time and in offer, and the prices were still unbelievable, and I think that they are still unbelievable till today. Catch is very much known to be a discounter. In 2017, we decided that we want to go down the... we want to introduce a marketplace to Catch. We found ourselves until 2017 with a full warehouse, lots of people packing, lots of people buying, lots of people photographing, but we still only had about 30,000 products in our warehouse. In comparison, eBay sells tens of millions of products. Mm. So there were many items that we were not selling.
Yes.
And we couldn't sell them ourselves. Our bank account was already, you know, we've maximized our space, our talent, and our financial backing. And looking at the success of Amazon and other marketplaces around the world, we decided to open a marketplace. Yeah. And we did exactly that. And we used the opportunity to rebrand our site from Catch of the Day, because we were no longer of the day, to Catch. It was an easy transition and an easy rebrand, because a lot of people were talking about us as Catch for years previous to that. And we were referring to ourselves as Catch. So the transition was really easy, and I'm happy to say that 3 or 4 years later, people still use Catch. They still use Catch of the Day. We called our book, that's number one on Booktopia. Did I mention that? Catch of the Decade. And in the back of the book, there's a picture of me holding the Catch of the Day logo. So we are connected to both the Catch logo and the Catch of the Day logo. And I'm happy for you to refer to us as the founders of Catch or Catch of the Day. We love both brands. That's just the same.
Yeah, yeah. Look, we've never met, but like we have some mutual friends and stuff. And yeah, you and your brother are referred to as the Catch guys.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, the Catch of the Day.
Yeah.
It's just the same. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay. So there is a consistent theme across the businesses that you have either launched or developed. Always tend to be online, e-commerce, and a strong kind of two-sided marketplace. Not all of them, but a lot are. So one thing that I find just absolutely fascinating is just so many and how the hell you can focus and like, even like when you launch another one that requires team and like, you know, your team, your core team at the time before you launch that new company, they're going to be only excited around the new thing, right? Because the new is fun, right? How do you maintain those, you know, your business as usual, the core business while you're, you know, adventuring with other stuff?
I know that it sounds amazing, but as I'm reminiscing and as I've written the book and I spent a lot of time thinking about our journey, we actually mentioned what the secret sauce here. And we left it till the end of the book. And the secret sauce is what we like to call building intrapreneurs within the business. Not entrepreneurs with an E, but intrapreneurs with an I. Who are they? These are amazing people that have been with you for quite some time that have what we like to call the Catch DNA. And the Catch DNA means hard work, smarts, think outside the box, etc. And the way that we've launched those businesses is we've generally plucked a successful leader within a certain business and moved them to be in charge of a new incubated business. Yes. So, for example, the person that was in charge of grocery run, his name is Kalman Pollack. Kalman, by the way, is also my cousin, and he started with us sweeping the floor in our Springville shop at 2008, you know, 12 years ago. And prior to launching Grocery Run in 2011, he was one of our buyers at Catch.
Yep.
And he's proven himself, and he actually came up with the whole concept of selling groceries online. He actually approached us, and we talk about it in the book, and said, hey, guys, we sell lots of stuff on Catch, but we never really sell groceries. Why don't we give groceries a try? And we told him, we're not sure if it's going to work or not, but if you want to give it a try, just go and do it, you know?
Mm.
And he had what we like to call the Catch DNA. He understood the formula, the mentality. And to answer your question, we surround ourselves with really smart people. We give them the autonomy and the freedom to be able to execute, make decisions. We like to make decisions as a group rather than as a founding team, filtering down the decision. We like to sit together around the room. And one of the things that I'm super proud of is the kind of culture that we managed to build within Catch. And if you ask around or if you check LinkedIn and see what's going on right now with the book and all the feedback, everyone just is mesmerized by the kind of culture that we managed to build in those businesses where people were so happy to come to work every single day. And when people are happy when they come to work, they always give you 120%. Mm. They don't want to go elsewhere. It doesn't matter. And it goes to a point of being way beyond financial gain. Mm. It's not about your salary. If you enjoy your teammates, the people that are surrounding you every day, and you come every day to an exciting place of work with lots of exciting challenges of being David versus Goliath, you know, trying to conquer the industry and be a leader, it's a lot of fun. I really miss it, Adam, because I haven't been doing it for about, 16 months already.
Yeah, no, look, that environment is really infectious, and that's where the real magic and the energy can happen. So I'm curious as well, what is your advice on even just like building for people watching or listening, like looking to build that early stage team, that founding team? Like, what are some key elements around building a really infectious culture?
I think culture is being built from the top, you know, and I have to say that the culture of Catch was myself, you know. I love people. I like to show them that I love them, and people absolutely enjoy that kind of an atmosphere. The other thing that has to come from the top is work ethic. Myself and my brother were always at work, always there to lend a hand. Listen, talking about lending a hand, you know, in the early days when a container arrived outside our warehouse, we all jump in and we unload the container. And if there's too many emails from customer service, we all jump in and we lend a hand. And if there's too many orders, then I was a warehouse guy as well. And when your team sees that kind of an attitude, and they can see you working late at night and sending messages, trying to create and keep on building, it creates that infectious, magic. Again, I use the word DNA all the time, you know, because it's something very, very special that we've created. There's no secret formula here. I mean, we can talk about that forever. Generally, the questions that I get about culture, I find them the hardest to explain, Adam, because how do you explain a culture that was built over a decade and a half? We try our best in the book, but I hope that that will be able to lead your audience somewhere. But it's very hard to say
it's one. Hard. You can only understand culture if you're in it and you see it and it's what you observe,
yeah.
Right? So no, I understand. But no, I think you really answered that question. So I'm curious. Let's talk about more lessons, like. You know, you've got some incredible experiences here. What else would you like to share with our audience when it comes to building and scaling digital businesses and exiting them as well?
Did we talk about risk or not yet?
Nope.
Okay, so let's talk about risk, you know. Risk is one of those traits that I think become easier with repetition. The more risk you take, the more comfortable you are with taking risk. I think that myself and my brother are quite different people, but when it comes to taking risks, this is one of those characteristics that both of us are very similar at.
Mm.
we got to a point where we can take it blindly and we don't have to get each other's permission, kind of, you know. For example, I remember that my brother wasn't that interested in the logistics side of the business, in the warehousing. And as early as mid-2013, we invested $20 million into a robotic automation in our warehouse on the western side of Melbourne. My brother wasn't interested in that at all, and he completely trusted me in the process of finding the system and negotiating the deal and installation and everything else. So this was a $20 million risk, so to speak, that we completely trusted each other blindly. We invest in lots of Melbourne startups. We invested in startups and businesses like Tribe by Jules Lund and Hypages that will most likely be listed this year.
Done very well.
I mean, we really enjoy, you know, sharing our learnings with other local businesses. But again, it involves risks. And we also invested in a few startups that completely failed, that I'm embarrassed to say that we gave them money. But it is what it is, Adam. You have to take risks sometimes. And if you don't, you're not going to benefit from future growth.
Yeah.
And
so I'm curious then, when it comes to risk, it's around decision making. Yeah. And, you know, when once you've got, like, you had a really, you know, really big win with Catch, and then you've kind of built upon that, right? And you've kind of made key decisions, right? But you guys would have been at a point where there's infinite amount of things you can try. There's infinite amount of things you can do. And it's actually still what you say no to, right? Like, there are going to be some things that you say no to, and you have some sort of decision-making framework around what is it that excites you? What is it that your gut tells you?
Yeah.
Like, can you tell me a little bit about, like, how you make these kinds of decisions?
So I'll tell you a story of something that we failed in our decision making.
Yeah.
Around 2017, we did quite a lot of things. So we launched that marketplace and we merged with Luxury Escapes to get a share in that business. It was a very, very busy year, and we were also starting to prepare for an IPO. And suddenly we got a phone call from New Zealand. This company called Pumpkin Patch, that manufactures kids' apparel and clothing, went into receivership. And are we interested in the database and the IP? And we jumped on a plane to Auckland and we purchased the IP and the database of Pumpkin Patch. And the story there is basically titled to stick to what you know best. And the difference between what Catch of the Day was doing till that time and Pumpkin Patch was quite different. And unfortunately, we only realized it a year later. Mm. Catch of the Day's specialty was buying end of lines and clearance from suppliers, photographing it, putting it on our, you know, B2C website and shipping it out. Pumpkin Patch required a completely different, you know, DNA and structure, whereby we had to design kids' clothing, find factories in China that manufacture them, bring them around in SKUs, sizes, seasonality, photographing young kids. And long story short, a year later, we realized that it's not working. It's not for us for a bunch of reasons. The main reason, it was very distracting. We had so much going on in the office. It was a small part of the business, but it was taking a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of warehouse space, and so on. And they say that, you know, changing your mind is a sign of intelligence. And we've changed our mind. Mm. We thought that it's going to be a great idea. And I'm very happy to say that a year later, we completely changed our mind and we shut that business. We ended up selling it to a company in New Zealand called EasyBuy. That's part of the Noni B Group. And I'm sure it's very successful under their stewardship, because this is exactly what they do and they know how to do it. But this was very different from what we were doing at the time. Yeah. Again, put it in the bin, forget about it. Don't cry about spilt milk. We probably lost a little bit of money on it, but so be it.
Yeah, no, interesting. So, yeah, you've learned, like, yeah, it's really difficult to do new things that you're not, like, part of your core, right? But at the same time, like, it could be argued, like, with Grocery Run, isn't that kind of different from Catch?
No, it wasn't. And I think Grocery Run was really a great success, because it was a win-win for both sides. What happened with Grocery Run, they were able to open relationships with lots and lots of grocery suppliers that were not selling on Catch. Initially, they were selling those groceries on Grocery Run alone.
Yes.
But after a very short time, we started selling the same groceries. When I say groceries, it could be vitamins and
yes.
perfumes and cosmetics and so on. And we tried to sell exactly the same goods on Catch, and suddenly we realized that Catch can sell 5 or 10 times the volume that Grocery Run would sell.
Yes.
So to the consumer, they were actually selling to the Catch Group, and Catch Group was merchandising those products on both Grocery Run and on Catch. And guess what? Some of the same products were actually selling on Mamgo as well, if they were mom and baby related. So yes. it was an interesting formula. The problem with that when it comes to focus is that which brand do we push?
Yes.
When I go to an interview or when we do an ad in a newspaper or TV, which brand do we talk about? And I think it was an easy choice. Catch was the cash cow,
yes.
the site that touched absolutely everyone. And after some time, both Grocery Run and Mamgo ended up integrating and becoming part of Catch.
Interesting. So now you've kind of consolidated.
We consolidated it. So in one way, maybe the best path forward would be to not build verticals. Saying that, if we didn't go down the vertical path, we wouldn't have discovered it now.
Yeah.
It's been an interesting journey. I think I should write a book about
it. Yeah, crazy. So to kind of work towards wrapping up and rounding things out, you ended up selling to West Farmers.
Yeah.
Late last year, right?
Yeah, it was in August 2019. Catch sold to West Farmers. It's the owner of Australia's Bunnings, Kmart, Target, and Officeworks. It just, you know, I pinch myself just thinking about, you know, the achievement that Catch now sits under the same umbrella, and it sold for $230 million.
Yeah. Okay, amazing. And yeah, so you've had three exits and over $1 billion in, is that annual revenue?
No, $1 billion is the total number of the exits because okay. It now sold for $855
yep.
and Catch was $230 and the total is $1.08 yep. or something.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So working towards wrapping up, one thing that I have noticed that is consistent across your journey, you and your brother, and like I said, I've never met you, but heard of you and your brother around the traps because we have mutual friends,
sure.
is not afraid to buy a portion, invest a portion, do JVs with yep. other companies, yep. merge together, yep. and moving quite fast. Why is that? That's very unique.
Look, we talk about it quite a lot in the book, and it's definitely been a trend. And before we came up with the concept, with the book's name of Catch of the Decade, we actually thought of calling the book 1+1=3. Because 1+1=3 was a trend or a thread that goes throughout our history. Mm-hmm. And we are true believers that you can achieve more by teaming up with your direct competitor or a competitor of sorts. And you should be satisfied and you'll gain more by having a smaller piece of a bigger pie. And we've proven it once, obviously, with Menulog. Got a smaller piece of a bigger pizza. And then we did exactly the same thing with our friends at the Lux Group.
Yes.
So today, myself and my brother own 20% of Luxury Escapes. And together we own the Daily Deal site, which is Scoupon and Kudo.
Yes.
And it is great not to have a direct competitor of sort, but there's so many other benefits because there's other brands that can now sit around the table and think about what else we can do with those businesses. In a way, we did the same thing with West Farmers, but in that case, we did not keep any piece of that pie. They bought the whole pie. But I'm certain that in whatever other businesses or ventures we go into in the future, we would look at that early on in the journey rather than later in the journey, because it just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, it's really smart, and it's often like a bit of a taboo thing because you want, like, you look at the competitor and you want to compete and you want to beat them, and you look at what they're doing and you copy what they're doing.
That's right. That's right. But if you put the egos aside, we're all, you know, nice guys that would really enjoy dinner or a coffee together. And you know, in the book, we talk about the great success that myself and my brother achieved, and we say that if it wasn't the two of us, we could not have done as many things. So you can certainly achieve a lot more if you have a larger group of people. Mm. Like, for example, I can tell you that Catch plus Kogan would have been a much more successful company than Catch and Kogan separately. Mm. Of course, we never did a deal with them, but
it
would have made a lot of sense.
Yeah, no. Okay, interesting. Yeah. So you said you've been out of the game for 12 or so months, probably semi-retired but working on the next thing. Like what's next? What's exciting for you?
So look, it's been a crazy year, of course. And as soon as we sold the business, we thought we were going to have a lot of fun and traveling and enjoy some rest. But then Corona came and we just walked a lot around our local park. So at least we can say that we've written a book, which is something that I can show my grandchildren. But we have discovered during Corona that that we're not ready to retire. And Corona has certainly brought with it a lot more problems in the digital space that require solving. So we're just about to launch next week a new business. That new business is going to be called Little Birdie. Little Birdie told me. And Little Birdie will be a site that will feature the best deals in the country, the best coupons in the country, and so on. That's all I can really say right now. But we're hoping that it will become your daily destination of discovery.
Interesting. Okay, amazing. That's exciting. So, obviously that's coming soon. And two last questions.
Yep.
One, any final words of wisdom that you would like to share with our audience that during this time period, you started Catch of the Day during a recession, we're in recession now, any final words of wisdom? And then also, where's the best place people can find out more about Catch of the Decade?
Final words of wisdom to people that are looking to start something is don't wait for perfection. A lot of founders think that they need to perfect their product to be ready for the day of launch. It doesn't have to be perfect. I can promise you that a month, 6 months, or a year later, it will be completely different. It may pivot to a different direction altogether, or it will just need to keep improving. Don't wait for perfection. Jump in the water right now. January 2021 is the best time ever to launch a startup. If you missed the 2006 rush that I was lucky enough to be a part of. The book is sold absolutely everywhere right now. Of course, online you can get it from Booktopia, from Catch, from Amazon, etc. But it's in every good and not so good bookstores all around the country. Feedback's been amazing. I think it's going to be the Bible of Australian entrepreneurship in the coming years. I'm really excited about this book.
Amazing. Well, look, Gabby, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. And sharing just so much wisdom and lessons and failures and just everything you've learned, and congratulations on all your success.
It was a pleasure.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed this interview. As you might already know, our mission at Founder is to help tens of millions of people every single week with our content, either start or grow their business, which is exactly why we're partnering with world-class founders such as Damon John, Alexa Von Tobel, Greta Van Riel, and so many more to teach crucial skills such as negotiation, finance, e-commerce, and so much more. So if you'd like to get access to these free exclusive trainings, please go to founder.com/free. These are 100%. We go super in depth on teaching a particular topic, and I know that you're going to love them if you enjoy this podcast. So just go to founder.com/free. All right, guys, I'll see you in the next episode.